We're doing Parshat Toldot. In our Parsha, Yitzchak is, can't have children, so he prays to Hashem. The term the Pasuk uses for Yitzchak's prayer is Vayetar. Means he prayed and he prayed and he prayed and he prayed. The Pasuk says, Na'atarot Nishikot Sone. When someone who hates us kisses us, it's like he's kissing us too much. Even one kiss is too much. So, Vayetar, Yitzchak prayed. It's the same term. It's a tremendous amount. Vayetar lo, Hashem granted him. What we don't find with the other patriarchs, his wife gets pregnant with twins. The Pasuk describes in the introduction, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. It says it twice. So Rashi right away says that Hashem made it that to refute the jokers. Here we see an important concept. People sometimes make jokes and we say, what do I care? I've got 500 proofs they're wrong. No, Hashem did care. Hashem made it that everyone could see that Yitzchak looked identical to Yaakov. Even though people didn't have a basis for those jokes, Hashem refutes the jokes. The Ibn Ezra explains the idea that Avram gave birth to Yitzchak is that Avram raised Yitzchak. One might think Avram was busy raising the whole world. Avram was busy doing other things. No. It says Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. It repeats it. Holid could also mean to raise. That Avram raised Yitzchak. Yitzchak marries Rivka. How old is he? He is 40 years old. How old was Rivka? So the Da'at Zakenim says she was 14. We all know Rashi that she was 3. And they're praying, and Yitzchak's prayers get answered. So people aren't comfortable with this idea, but it's an important idea. The fact of the matter is, when you walk up to, I'll tell you a story, a kid's playing in the park, and a big thug walks over to him and says, kid, you got a lollipop there. I want your lollipop. So the first grader looks up at this seventh grader, and he smiles and says, no. So the seventh grader looks down at the first grader and says, you see how big I am. You see how small you are. How do you tell me no? So the kid points, and the guy turns around, and he sees two guys bigger than him standing behind him. He says, because those are my brothers. Okay. So they're... The fact of the matter is, when you have big family members, it carries a weight. We don't like talking about it. Everyone likes to feel like I can realize my potential. That's true. But at the end of the day, you are one. And when a person has more than that, then that's a power. And the fact of the matter is, Rabbi Akiva was the giant that Moshe Rabbeinu said, I want the Torah to be given by him. Why are you giving it by me, Hashem? He's greater. So Rabbi Akiva was tremendous. And yet when it came time to appoint the leader, the rabbi said, not Rabbi Akiva. Because he doesn't have the power of a father and a grandfather and a great-grandfather, etc. So one point of comfort is a famous joke. Two kids are talking to one another. One kid says, you know who my father is? You know who my grandfather was? You know who my great-grandfather was? So the other kid, and then he says, and who are your parents? So the second kid says, you know, you are the end of your family's lineage and I am the beginning of mine. Meaning my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren will point back, I'm the son of, I'm the grandson of, I'm the great-grandson of. So that's true. But at the end of the day, there is power when a person comes from a lineage, and that's why when Yitzchak prays, his prayers get answered sooner than Rebekah's. The bottom line is you carry more weight, and that's an asset. People sometimes say, all things being equal, should I marry a girl that's a from birth or not? Well, there's an asset in marrying from for birth. Sometimes there's an asset to marrying someone not. You'll speak the same language. You'll have a lot of similar experiences. I'm not saying that's the only thing that matters. You see that Rachel married Rabbi Akiva, and she's the wealthiest woman probably in most of Jewish history. The merits that she has, I don't know if there's anyone out there that has her merits. So if she would have thought, oh no, Rabbi Akiva's father is a ger, and he doesn't know anything, he doesn't even know Aleph Beis. But you see, she looked at him and she saw what he was worth. It's not a win-all, but it is an asset. Meaning, don't think that's the wild card, that's the only thing that matters, but it does give a certain weight. There is a benefit when a person walks in and he's not only walking in, he's walking in with the clout behind him. I'm saying on a spiritual level. So Yitzchak's prayers get answered, but this idea that Yitzchak and Rebekah kept praying. We are weak in prayer. Chazal say prayer is one of those things that always has to be strengthened. How many times did you pray about the same thing? Moshe Rabbeinu prayed over 500 times. Yitzchak is described as Vayetar. He prayed over and over and over again. You're not supposed to get tired. The Talmud says one of the things we have to strengthen ourselves in is prayer. We don't give up. The fact that we have to pray again, okay, Yitzchak also prayed again. He didn't get his prayers answered like that. How many times did Sarah Imenu pray? Avraham Avinu? They kept going on and on, year after year. They didn't give up. So prayer is the place where you connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and part of what we learn here is how much a person has to keep at it. Kaveh el Hashem, chazak v'yametz libecha, v'kaveh el Hashem. You continue hoping. You didn't get what you asked for the first time. You keep praying. The key is to keep hoping, keep praying, keep talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Rebecca gets into tremendous pain. And when she gets into this great pain, she says, why did I ask to be pregnant in the first place? She started asking other women, is this normal birth pain? And they told her, no, this bad is not normal. So she says, why? Why did Hashem do this to me? What's supposed to happen here? Why am I living in the world? Maybe it would be better if I were dead. She's in such pain. So she goes and she prays to Hashem. Rashi says she went to the prophets and asked them, what's going to happen here? Am I going to die from this pregnancy? And Ramban says she went to pray. Lidrosh et Hashem, to seek out Hashem, means she went to pray. And Hashem tells him, don't worry, you're suffering a lot, but you're going to live out the pregnancy, and you're going to have two children that are massive. And the fighting that's happening in utero is representative of what's going to happen in the future. And then Hashem uses a word that can be understood in two ways. Hashem says, V'rav yavod tzair, and the great will serve the young. Where do you put the comma? Does it mean the young will serve the great, or does it mean the great will serve the young? The great, comma, will serve the young, meaning the young will serve him. Or the great will serve the young. Which one? So our sages have different interpretations. She doesn't tell Yitzchak about this prophecy. So Yitzchak doesn't know that Yaakov is predetermined to be, is pre-prophesized to be the great one. And Esav is born and he's all red. And Yitzchak sees Esav all red and he figures it's dangerous to circumcise him. He could bleed to death. When a child's red, very often that's an indication that there's a problem with their blood. Till today. A child that's very red has to be checked by the doctors. So Yitzchak waits. He doesn't circumcise Esav on the eighth day. Yaakov gets circumcised on the eighth day. Yitzchak postpones it until Esav is 2-3 years old and he sees his color's not changing. So he says, okay, I guess that's his natural color. Once we didn't do it on day 8, we'll do it on age 13, just like Yishmael. When Esav reaches age 13, Esav says, don't come near me with that knife. And Esav never gets circumcised. They grow up, and then you could tell what they're like. Very often people are very impressed by kids that are sweet when they're little. You don't know anything about parents' parenting skills so long as the kids are little. Kids are sweet. There's a line that people say in the name of the Rebbe of Satmar. You go in Jerusalem and you see the kids that are so sweet you want to eat them up. And then you see how they grew up and you wish you had. When they grow up, you start seeing who they are. The first 2 years Esav does his drugs and stuff in hiding. No one knows what kind of person he is. Then when he reaches 15, so he goes out to the field, and Nimrod sees him in the field, and he says, what you doing in my field? And Esav says, who are you? And Nimrod says, oh, this territory is mine. You can't go hunting over here. And Esav says, come here, I'll show you a thing or two. You think you're going to tell me I can hunt in your field? And Nimrod is with his men. Esav says, I'll duel you here tomorrow. Nimrod says, fine, it's a deal. Till death do us part. The next day, Nimrod comes riding with his men, and Esav asks Yaakov, what am I going to do? I challenged him to a duel. How am I going to win? So Yaakov says Nimrod's strength is he stole that jacket that Adam had in the Garden of Eden, and he wears that on him all the time. And then all the animals bow to him. Everyone's subservient to him. What you do is you have to get him to take off that jacket before you start fighting him, and then you could take him down. Don't fight him when all the men, his men are around. Find a way to get him alone. So Esav listens to his brother's advice. He hides in the bushes and he waits. And Nimrod comes out and he's looking with his men. And then he says, guys, let's divide up. We'll find him. So they divide up and he waits until Nimrod's all alone. And when he sees Nimrod's men are far off and Nimrod's all alone, and Nimrod's a big warrior, Nimrod, he comes out and says, hey, you want a word with me? Nimrod says, yeah. Esav says, I'm ready for you. So Nimrod comes riding over, gets off his horse, and Asa says, just a second, before we start, let's take off our jackets. We don't want to get too dirty in this fight, right? And he makes believe like he's going to get his jacket off, and Nimrod walks to the side to take off his jacket, and he doesn't notice that as he takes off his jacket, Asa jumps him and kills him. Okay? Not quite the gentleman. And takes his jacket. He takes that jacket that God made for Adam and Chava, and he takes it home. And now he's killed Nimrod. And he's scared. Maybe Nimrod's men are going to catch up to him. He runs home, and he hears everyone talking. Avram died. Same day, Avram and Nimrod died, right? Nimrod tried killing Avram their whole life. Nimrod was Avram's nemesis. They both died in the same day. Avram's grandson killed Nimrod. Yeah, Nimrod tried killing Avram. Esav, his first murder is Nimrod. He raped a girl that day, did a bunch of other despicable things that day. But he, Esav kills Nimrod, and he comes charging into Yaakov's tent, and he's scared they're going to catch up to him. They're going to kill him. He sees Yaakov's preparing lentils for his father, Yitzchak, sitting in mourning. Avram died that day. So Esav comes charging in and he sees the lentils. He says, what's cooking there? And Yaakov says, you know, Grandpa died today. It's an important day. I'm preparing lentils for Dad. He says, give me those lentils. I'm hungry. Yaakov says, you know, you're a part of the family. You're not only a part, you're the firstborn. You're the representative of this family. You're the firstborn. You want to give that up? Esav says, it's no pride to me. You see, I'm a killer now. I'm a gangster now. It's not a great honor for me to walk around and say, my grandfather was pious. In my line of work, that doesn't get you too far. That's of no value to me. Yaakov says, well, I'm willing to take the name, the continuation of the family. The continuation of the family. Esav says, buddy, you tell me, Avraham Avinu was pious, right? Yaakov says, yeah. He says, did he die? Avram says, yeah, he died today. He says, great. So Nimrod was wicked. He died today. Avram was pious. He died today. Why do I need to be the continuation of this piety? I don't see that pious people live forever either. So what difference does it make? And in that, Esav denies the world to come. There's no meaning to life. The question is, do you live or die? If you die, that's it. What difference does it make? So Esav says, hinanuchi alech lamud. I know I'm going to die anyways. It doesn't help me to be so pious. What do I need to be the firstborn? I need to be the representative of the family. So, Esav says, you can have it. Yaakov says, fine, I want the rights to Marasa Machpelah too. When Dad dies, who's going to get the double portion there? Esav says, fine. And Yaakov says, here, have some bread, eat, calm down. Now let's have it in writing. He writes up a contract in which Esav gives over the rights to the Marasa Machpelah, gives over his rights to the firstborn, and Esav says, you think I'm going to outlive Dad? In my line of work, I'm lucky if I live. Who knows how long I'm going to live? I'm going to outlive Dad. I'm going to ever inherit the name of the family. He walks out and he laughs. He starts telling people in the street, you see what happened? Yaakov bought the rights of the firstborn. I got the best dish off of him. And he's mocking Yaakov. Everyone that hears it says, your father's a millionaire. Your grandfather was a multimillionaire. And you just gave away your rights to the firstborn, your double portion, because you're so sure you won't live it. People laughed at him. The pasuk says, "Vayochal vayesht vayakom vayelach." He ate, he drank, he got up, he left. Our tradition is, he ate, didn't make a blessing, drank, didn't make a blessing, got up to leave, didn't make an after blessing, did it all without a yarmulke, and just walked out the door like, ah, good riddance, fine. He's a glutton, he's into this world. What does he tell Yaakov? I'm going to open my mouth, you pour it down. Okay, let me just enjoy it as I gulp it down. That's what it says. Hal iteini na. Feed me like you feed the cattle, just pour it in. So Esav's slobbering over it, and Yaakov says, you don't fit to lead this family. Esav says, fine, you take the rights. No problem. And Esav walks out telling everyone about the deal, and then people start calling him Edo. All you want is red. You're born red, and now you want to drink red. Yeah, it always shocked me that in the United States they build everything out of red bricks. Yes? Part of it is Midrashim. Part of it is the Drosh HaSaran, his interpretation of the Midrash.
Which
the story of the coat is in the Midrash. The story of the fight with Nimrod is in the Midrash. The idea that Yaakov gave him bread is in the Pasuk. The idea that being the firstborn represents the family is in the Drosh HaSaran, that's what they were talking about.
Okay, so
the idea that Esav mocked it is in the Pasuk.
He actually considers himself
That's the Ran. I'm saying Chazal say it in other words. Chazal say, and the idea that he said, do righteous people live, is in the Rishonim. I don't remember which Rishonim say that, but that's in the early commentaries, that that's what he was saying. Hine anochi olech lamut. In the words, hine anochi olech lamut. So that's in the Rishonim. So Esav has... the medrash about those precious clothing is in the Dat Zekenim. And the Yalkut Shimoni also brings that medrash. Yeah. And Hine Anochi Olech Lamut, that I'm going to die before my father, is a Dat Zekenim, that he didn't think he'd outlive Yitzchak. And the idea, you know what, you could look at my notes online. There I quote it with the sources. Wow. Yeah, on my website you have the notes and there you have the sources. Okay? No, on my website, 123Torah.com. You can see I have there a bunch of pages of notes on the parasha, and over there I quote the sources for what I'm saying. So, from this story we learn that if a Rush owns a Sefer Torah or another mitzvah, then you should try to buy it off them. Don't leave it in their possession. It's, just like Yaakov takes the rights of the firstborn from Esav. And he makes Esav promise that he won't question the sale forever. Esav goes back on his promise. After Yaakov dies, Esav comes and makes claims. He has the rights to Maris HaMachpelah. That's in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the idea that he sold Maris HaMachpelah together with it. Yes?
I just get back to Ishmael. Who is his connection to the Maris
HaMachpelah? Who said he has a connection?
That's my question.
I'm unaware of his connection.
Because he went back to Buriel.
Right. He buried Avram there. Right, but that's it.
But that's
We have two approaches as to Yitzchak. The Ibn Ezra says the Yitzchak was poor, and that's why he was used to having good foods from his father's house, who was wealthy, and that's why Esav prepared him all this good food. The Ramban says no. They were all wealthy, just like we learned earlier in Rav Chalap. Yitzchak was also very wealthy. And we're going to take a break of 30 seconds, and then we'll continue. We're moving forward. So there's a famine, and Yitzchak thinks he should go down to Egypt, and Hashem tells him no. Avram's going down to Egypt was an allusion to the Jewish exile in Egypt. You go to Plishtim, and that will be an allusion to the fact that the Jews will be exiled in another direction to Babylon. Yitzchak goes back to the place where his father had lived, and we went back to Babylon where Avram was born. Yitzchak shifted because of the famine, we shifted before because of the famine. Rebekah was not abducted, and so too, when we were exiled by Babylon, we had a relatively easy exile. Avimelech makes a declaration, anyone who touches this man or his wife will die. Everyone looked up to Yitzchak. In the Babylonian exile, we had positions of leadership. Daniel, Ezra, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Initially, Yitzchak was given permission to live there. Initially, we were given permission to go back and rebuild the temple. Ultimately, Yitzchak was kicked out of the land of the Philistines. Ultimately, they forbade us to continue building the temple. They come back and say, let's make a covenant with you. They came back and permitted us to rebuild the second temple. So Hashem tells Yitzchak, I want you to live where I tell you. And Hashem is telling him, I will guide you where to live. You're not supposed to leave Israel, even when there's a famine. And I will maintain my promise with you. This is where Hashem promises Yitzchak, he will have the land of Israel. This is the promise. This is the one place over here. I'm staying with you because Avram kept my covenant. He kept what I wanted. Rashi says that means Avram kept the whole Torah. Ramban asks on that. He says, it says over here that everyone continued in Avram's footsteps. So how come Yaakov did things that the Torah prohibits? He married two wives. According to our tradition, all four of them were sisters. I'm saying he married two sisters. How did Amram marry his aunt? That's against the Torah. How did Moshe erect 12 matzeva? The Torah says you're not allowed to erect a one stone altar. Yaakov erects a one stone altar. Moshe does it 12 times. So he says maybe the idea that we kept the Torah and future generations was the idea that the future generations would keep the Noahide laws with great diligence, but not all the Torah that Avraham Avinu did. He says you can't say they did. There are different answers given as to how did Yaakov marry two sisters, but it's a good question. So they come to Philistine territory, and he says, this is my sister. But what's he going to do with the two kids? Avram walks in, and it's only him and Sarah. He could say, that's my sister. Yitzchak walks in, he's got two kids. So he says, I have another wife. This is from my other wife. Yitzchak comes into Philistine territory. He says, this is from my other wife. It says he had a lot of cattle and servants. It doesn't say he had money. Because what they were jealous of was not his money. They were jealous because they saw he had tremendous cattle. He had tremendous servants. His property was successful. To the point where Avimelech comes to him and says, I don't have as many cattle as you. I don't have as many servants as you. And your house is bigger than my palace. It's not right. You're living in Philistine territory. People are looking at you and they see you wealthier than me. We have the story that Yitzchak digs wells. He redigs the wells of his father. His men find water, and every time the Philistine shepherds fight with them, he names the first well Asek, because there were many fights until it was destroyed. He names the second one Sitna. There was actual hatred. He names the third one Rechavot. No fights. Everything's fine. So our sages say they represent the temples. The first temple had minuscule fights that brought its destruction. The second temple had greater fights. Even the beginning of the temple, there was all kinds of evil letters being written about the Jewish people by the Kutim, which brought about the cessation of the building. And only the third temple, where things were calm and we were able to, Bezrat Hashem, the third temple is where things will be without any fights. When they fought over the first well, so Yitzchak started thinking that's a coincidence. When they came and fought over the second well, then Yitzchak said, this is anti-Semitism. And the first time he was willing to think, maybe they really thought it was their water. When it happened the second time, then Yitzchak said, no, this is real hatred. Now, Yitzchak started being concerned. He said, the king kicked me out of the country, and now shepherds are fighting with me. So then maybe the next step is the people are going to gang up and attack me. And so Hashem appears to him and says, don't be scared. And that's what happens. Avimelech actually comes and asks him for a peace treaty. Hashem makes it that they all look up to him. They say, wow, you're amazing. Avimelech says, make a peace treaty with me. We treated you nicely. Yitzchak says, what do you mean you treated me nicely? So here there's a famous medrash. The medrash says, this is similar to a lion that had a bone stuck in its throat. And he says, whoever takes the bone out of my throat, I'll give him a big gift. So the stork comes, and with his long neck and beak, he reaches in, and he pulls out the bone. So he asks the lion, what will you give me? And the lion says, what do you mean? Your head was in the mouth of a lion, and I didn't eat you? I gave you the greatest gift in the world. You're still asking for more? That's what Avimelech says to Yitzchak. Look at how nice we were to you. You were living in Philistine territory, and we didn't destroy you. We didn't consume you. That's what the Midrash says. That was Avimelech's claim. We were so nice to you. Yeah, so we see Jewish history starts over here. We were nice to you. We didn't kill you, you Jew. He says, we didn't touch you. Meaning, I could have taken your wife. I didn't take your wife from you. We did only good with you. We made an edict. We made a law. No one's allowed to come near you. And even though everyone was jealous of you, we didn't let anyone take anything from you. So they made a covenant. They were very scared. They saw that his father had defeated four kings. He's amassed a tremendous wealth. So they were worried he's going to wipe them off. He was scared of them. They were scared of him. And the second thing is they were scared that it's only a matter of time till Yitzchak's descendants would come and kick them out of the land. So that's why they said, let's make a new covenant, that we've only been kind to you, we've only been good to you, and you'll be good to us. They were scared. Esav marries women, and they are very, very difficult to Yitzchak and Rivka. Our sages say it was more harmful to Yitzchak than Rivka. So here we have numerous understandings. One is, Rivka was used to it. You guys grew up seeing movies. If someone's going to sit on the bus and watch a movie, you could look in a sefer and you won't be as attracted to the movie. A guy walks on the bus and he has a magazine and then there are immodest pictures. You have no problem. You could open your sefer and learn. The guy sitting next to you is fighting. He keeps trying to look in the sefer and his eyes keep running the other way and he keeps trying. He has a harder time. When a person grows up with things, we saw in the beginning of the parasha that on the one hand, Rebecca in her prayers, well, she was weaker than Yitzchak. On the other hand, the fact that a person has a history, that a person comes from a different place, that's also an asset. That means that when she has to deal with daughters-in-law that are doing idol worship in the house, Yitzchak is devastated by it, and Rebecca takes it in stride. She can march along. Our sages say, what's this similar to? You take two vessels, you clank them together, so sometimes one breaks the other. It says, if you were to take a bone vessel and an earthenware vessel, so the bone vessel will bash the earthenware vessel. But if you take two bone vessels, they'll clank and neither one will break the other. Well, man was created from earth. It's more brittle, an earthenware vessel, versus a woman that was created from the man's rib, from bone. So bone breaks earthenware. And that's a rule in life. Men think they're stronger than women. You should know that in many, many areas, women can defeat men. Esav's wives defeated Yitzchak. They couldn't defeat Rebecca. When you have to negotiate with a woman, sometimes you're much better off putting a woman against a woman. Very often, men think that a man can win a woman. Well, in many circumstances, the woman can undermine a man. Right? There's no fury as a woman scorn, right? You guys know Dante. Yitzchak's eyes go bad. Why does his eyes go bad? One understanding is because he took bribes from Esav. Our sages say, the Torah says that taking a bribe causes one to go blind. The second understanding is because it says you're not supposed to look at evil people. And he used to look at Esav. He was fond of Esav. Well, looking at evil people affects a person negatively, and that's why Yitzchak went blind. Thirdly, when Avimelech abducted Sarah, so he gave her a gift. He asked, pray for me, says to Abraham. And here I gave your wife a covering for her eyes, an appeasement prize for what she had to undergo. Our sages say that as he said a covering for her eyes, he intended a dual meaning. He intended to say, and I wish her to go blind. And his curse came true in her son. Meaning when he said a covering for her eyes, he said it in a way that it sounded like, she should... this should be an appeasement for what she underwent. But he purposely worded it in a way that could have an alternate meaning, because he meant the alternate meaning, and that's what our sages warn us. The curse of a simple person should not be taken lightly. Even though Avimelech was no pious person, nonetheless, his curse came true. The fourth understanding is, because the verse says, Matzdik rasha u'marshia tzadik tovat Hashem gam shnehem. Hashem finds it despicable when someone takes a wicked person and says, oh, he's great. He takes a pious person and says, he's not as good as you think he is. So we have that tendency within us. When we see pious people, we say, why didn't he do this? And shouldn't he have done that? And you see, he's not perfect. We see wicked people, we say, he's not as bad as you think. He's got a good side to him. Maybe he had an upbringing. You don't know what he went through. We have all kinds of explanations. Hashem can't stand that. Hashem says, when someone's wicked, you got to say the truth. He's wicked. When someone's pious, you got to be able to see the good in him. So Yitzchak was doing that. About Esav, he was willing to see all the good that's in him. And now he was about to take everything away from Yaakov, right? He was ready to give Esav all the blessings. That's why Rebecca comes in behind his back, and she saves him from doing the other half of the mistake. But that's why he lost his eyesight. And the fifth understanding is because they made offerings to their idols, so the smoke of the idols, they destroyed his eyes. You guys know the other midrashim, right? That the angels were crying and their tears dropped in his eyes. And So he calls Esav and he says, look, I'm 5 years away from when my father died. I'm 170 years old now. Dad died at, no, I'm sorry. I'm 122 years old. His mother died at 127. I'm 122. It's Passover now. Now is my birthday. And I'm scared within 5 years of a parent. You have to be concerned that your life is at risk. So he says, bring me some food. I will bless you. And before I die, I want to give you blessings. Now, when a person eats, if a holy person eats, so that affects him. Just like listening to music would arouse the prophets to prophecy. Now, Hashem can't be fooled, right? Who's giving the blessing here? Yitzchak saying the blessing, but it's Hashem giving the blessing. The whole potency of the blessing is the fact that Hashem is giving this blessing. So Yitzchak calls in Esav thinking, you're the one who represents the family. And he doesn't know that Rebekah received that prophecy saying that Yaakov is the future. He doesn't know that Esav sold his rights to represent the family. Now, Rebekah never told him, either because she assumed he knew, she couldn't imagine that prophets knew things that he didn't know, or she was embarrassed that she went and asked someone else and didn't ask her husband. Or Hashem just caused it to happen that way so that Yaakov will get the blessings. So, Rebekah calls in Yaakov. He's a grown man already, right? He's how old is he? 53. Rebekah calls in Yaakov and says, I want you to go and bring me the goats that are legally mine, and I'm making the food your father likes, and I want you to get the blessings your father offered them to Esav. And Yaakov says, you know what? I'm sure before Dad gives a blessing, he's going to touch me, he's going to hug me, he's going to kiss me, and then he's going to notice I don't have all the hair Esav does. Yaakov might have known how to change his voice, or else he had a similar voice to Esav's voice. And she tells him, don't worry, any curses on me. So some of the commentaries say there are two interpretations to this. One is she made him a promise that really didn't work. It's on me. What do you mean it's on me? If he curses him, it's on him. Our sages say she said to him, I have a prophetic vision that's not going to happen. Things are going to work out right. But another interpretation is that she said to him, if you misbehave, what's your dad going to say? Oh, you tried to trick me. It's because you have your mother's genes. She comes from swindler's family, right? Her brother's a swindler. What's he going to do? He's going to blame me if you misbehave, right? So that's the nature people have. You see, it goes back to the days of Avram, of Yitzhak and Rebekah. When a parent sees a child does something, they say, that's your family's genes. That's your brother in him, right? So that's what the Das Kanim writes. That's what Rebekah said. I'm sorry, Yaakov, we got 3 minutes left. We'll do questions Thursday, maybe. So ordinarily, the nature of people is that they're happy that their eldest leads the family. And Rivka is so pious, she sees the truth. It doesn't interest her who's older. She sees that Yaakov is the pious one. So Rivka says, you know, Esav doesn't trust his wives. He leaves his coats by me. That coat that he got from Nimrod that came out of the Garden of Eden, it's by me. You take that when you go into your dad. So when he walks in, of course his father smells the Garden of Eden. And Yitzchak right away, even though he can't see and the room is pretty dark, he senses something's off. He says, come here, let me feel you. You're saying God's name. So why that doesn't sound like Esav. He says, Hakal kol Yaakov. Hakal kol Yaakov. Our sages say, when the voice of Yaakov is kal, there's a vav missing there. It doesn't say Hakol kol Yaakov. The first time the vav is missing, to indicate when the voice of Yaakov is weak, so then Hayadayim Yedei Esav, then Esav can take control. The only time Esav can take control is when we are lenient in Torah and prayer. If we live up to our end of it, Hakol kol Yaakov, then Esav's hands can't do anything. Yedei Esav is the numerical value of shalom, of peace. I have to look at the Rush again. I don't understand my own notes. I don't remember. The Medrash says, a Jew prays in Israel, he affects a Jew in France. Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov affects the world when you daven. Yadayim yedei Esav. Esav was given the power of the hands. When you fight with hands, you could only affect the one that you can touch. But Yaakov can affect the world. It doesn't say that Rebekah gave Yaakov wine. Where did Yaakov get wine from? Our sages say she took him like a little boy. She put the food in his hands. She walked him. She said, here, go. And Yaakov was crying as he was doing it. It was against his nature. Well, I'm going to lie to my father. So he gets 10 blessings corresponding to the 10 commandments, corresponding to the 10 declarations that created the world. And he blesses him from the dew of the heaven. Everyone gets dew. What does that mean, the dew of the heaven? That the dew will produce. Dew can fall and not impact. Hashem says, Yaakov Avinu says, Mital Hashemayim u'mishmanei aretz. The dew of the heaven will produce the fat of the ground. So he blesses Yaakov. And here we're going to end. I'll give you Dvar Torah. That's a very powerful Dvar Torah that you should have with you, because anytime they ask you to give a speech, you'll be able to pull this Dvar Torah out of your back pocket. Yaakov Avinu blesses, Yitzchak blesses Yaakov, and he tells him, V'yitin l'cha Elokim yitel shamayim u'mishmanei aretz. God should give you. So our sages say, why does it begin with the Vav? V'yitin l'cha Elokim. Why begin with the Vav? You should say, Yitin l'cha, Hashem will give you. Why does he begin with the Vav? And God should give you. So our sages say, Yitzchak was blessing Yaakov, God should give, and then he should give again, and then he should give again. That was the blessing. That's why I said, and he should give. The idea was God should give and give and give and give more and more and more. Why? Why not just give it all at once? Why do you have to give and give and give? So what's this similar to? There was a king who called in an officer he was very happy with, and he said to him, ask me, what gift do you want? So the officer said, I want one thing. Whenever I come in before you for the rest of my life, as many sacks as I'm carrying, you should fill them with material. So everyone laughs at him. That's what you ask for? Ask for a manor, ask for gold, ask for silver. He says, that's what I want. As many sacks as I bring into your palace, fill them with material, whatever material you want. So the king says, for the rest of your life, it's yours, no problem. So the first day, the guy walks in, he has two sacks. The king orders, you're in charge. Every time he walks in, just fill those sacks, okay? So the first day he walks in with two sacks, and he does his job, and he goes home with the two sacks filled with material. The next day he walks in with eight sacks. He took the material, made it into more sacks. Now he has eight sacks. The next day with 32. And by the fourth day, he has 120. By the fifth day, 500. By the sixth day, he's at 2,000. By the end of the month, he's by a billion. Okay? If you do the math, you'll see that you reach the billions already. By the end, then he cleans the king out. What was the wisdom of this noble? The wisdom was that he took what was a blessing one day and made it a vessel to accept more blessing the next day. In life, we are limited. We can't have limitless blessing today. When a person is single, he could have this much blessing. Then he gets married, he could have more blessings. He starts having kids, he could have more blessings. The kids become into a big family, he could have more blessings. You can't have all the blessings now. You're limited in what you can get. That's why Yaakov Yitzchak blesses him. You should receive, and you should receive, and you should receive. Because as you grow, you should receive more. Because as you grow, you become a potential for more growth, for more blessing. And that's why the Midrash says that the blessings go in line. Yitzchak blesses Yaakov. He concludes the blessings with Vayikra LeYaakov. He calls Yaakov at the end of the parasha, gives him a blessing and says, go off to Lavan. Yaakov begins his blessings to his children with Vayikra Yaakov LeBanav. He called in his children and then gave them the blessings. Yaakov concludes his blessings with Vizot Asher Diber Lehem Aviyem. This is what he blessed them. Moshe begins with Vizot HaBeracha Asher Berach Moshe. Moshe concludes his blessings with Ashrecha Yisrael. David HaMelech begins the blessings with Ashrei HaIsh. What are we saying? Each one continued the blessing with the other one left off. Yitzchak was blessing an individual, Yaakov. So he could only bless him this much. Yaakov is continuing the blessing where his father left off because now he has a family, 12 tribes. Moshe Rabbeinu sees the family evolved into a nation. So he picks up where Yaakov left off. And David HaMelech sees a kingdom. Where Moshe saw a nation, he sees a kingdom. So David HaMelech continues the blessing, and that's why the wording always begins with the other one's wording left off. So this is a beautiful Dvar Torah, which you guys can say at a Sheva Brachos and at a Bar Mitzvah, and at any happy occasion, you can adapt the Dvar Torah to match the occasion.